See, he, Keith kind of revealed his true feelings. He already told you that he worked with me, so he's trying to forget me already, right? Good morning, sisters and brothers. It's a pleasure to be here in Vancouver. Again, I like to say that I used to live here back in the early 80s until I actually realized how long ago that was. And I was out here working and marched in Operation Solidarity, and those were heady days in the opposition to the government of the day. And you folks are still doing some incredible things, fighting back bad policies like P3s. I really think it also shows the maturity of the leadership here that you would reach as far across the country as Nova Scotia to try to learn some lessons. It's Moosehead beer is now increasingly getting across the country and going into the United States and throughout the world. Keith's beer, some important institutions like that are beginning to find their way into other cultures, and you can only benefit from that. I certainly hope, though, that you don't have the same effects that we have. Our power corporation was privatized back in the early 90s, and they've been gutting their servants and maintenance force ever since. And as a result, every time we have a little bit of a heavy weather, heavy snowfall, which I know it's hard to believe, we do have from time to time bad weather in Nova Scotia. You know, the towers come down, the lines come down, and it's a serious crisis. So hopefully, I don't think BC Hydro has been privatized yet, has it?
Just part.
Okay. Well, there's another lesson from Nova Scotia that you take advantage of. I'm here to talk to you today a bit about. This isn't part of my 15 minutes, is it? Oh, jeez. I'm here to talk a bit about our experience with P3 schools in Nova Scotia. It was a short adventure with P3 schools that took place in the 90s from approximately 1993 through until 1999. And I think it's instructive because it came about at a time a new government was elected in 1993 that was facing a huge debt and deficit problem. We had, in fact, may still have, one of the highest per capita debts in the country. The revenues were certainly not allowing us to be able to do some of the things that needed to be done in the public sector in the province of Nova Scotia. The government that had been elected in 1993 was elected on the basis of raising people's expectations to a level that they were finding difficult to meet. One of them was certainly the area of replacing badly needed schools throughout our province. So, like I say, the new government had big plans. They also jumped in with other governments across the country and introduced balanced budget legislation. So not only were they faced with very significant problems that they had to solve, but they were continually trying to limit their options for how to deal with the situation, and certainly the balanced budget legislation did and does that. But along comes, so here we have a situation where our schools are badly in need of maintenance. We need a number of new schools. In fact, there was a capital construction committee that was formed in 1992, which recommended the expenditure of $30 million annually in order to, you know, begin to catch up to the serious deficit we had in school construction in the province of Nova Scotia. Over the first 3 years to 1996, instead of spending $90 million, the government spent more like $28 million. So they certainly weren't solving the problem, and it just continued to get worse. But along came the private sector. Along came supporters of the government, and they had the answer. And, of course, we know that the private sector is where the action is, issues like creativity and ingenuity and fiscal responsibility were things that were well touted by the private sector and many people have come to believe. Mind you, the shine's a bit off of that with Enron and other associated, and Nortel and other associated blunders. It's not a shine that many of us accepted and understood, but it certainly was there. There was another factor, of course, and you got a new government, and they were just elected after 14 years, the Liberals, and they were just affected or just elected with after 14 years of the Tories, and so they wanted to be reelected. They wanted to get funds in their coffers, so they wanted to be able to hand out some deals to their friends. So the P3 phenomena was presented to them in a way that it was really a way to solve a lot of their problems. So let me just give you a sense of how deliberate and how convinced this government was that P3 building, having public-private partnerships to build schools was going to solve their problems. There was, the Auditor General reported in 1997, and what he reported was on the objectives for P3s that were delivered both by the Department of Education and by the Department of Finance. And I think it's important to look at that. They're coming at it from different angles. So in the Department of Education, the objective, schools delivered via a public-private partnership will be flexible. They will be high-tech learning environments to support programs and services for students. All technology will be integrated and provide valuable support tools for students and professional staff. The schools will be connected electronically to neighboring schools so that equitable access to technology is accomplished. Private sector will refresh the technology, and refreshed technology will be provided to other schools in the region. One of the objectives of public-private partnerships is to ensure participatory planning for the facility to accommodate programs and services both now and in the future. And on it goes. There, it gives you some example of how this was going to solve all the Department of Education's problems. Department of Finance. From the perspective of the Department of Finance, you know, yada, yada, yada. Attract private capital to the province's public initiatives, thereby requiring less investment of public money. Transfer expertise to the private sector, thereby creating economic opportunities in the private sector. Right, so let's give the private sector all these economic opportunities, which will mean increased private sector job creation via increased sales, both external and internal to Nova Scotia. Enable the government to devote more of its resources to its core business, the delivery of essential service. I mean, if education is not a core service, right, what is? Well, it's an example, right? P3s can deliver anything. And, of course, transfer risk to the private sector where this can be done in a cost-effective manner. So there you have it. Introduce technology, light up the province, basically all the schools, but got lines going everywhere. Everybody's got new technology. Involve community partners and benefit private sector partners. Transfer risks. And, of course, as I indicated, other unstated objectives would be building as many schools as possible without affecting the debt and deficit. We used to laugh in question period. We used to ask the Minister of Education and Finance and the Premier, so what you're telling us is that you're going to build all these schools for nothing. This is going to be free. Yes, they said. This is. It was quite a deal. No, it was. It was quite a deal. So construction began in 1999, but it wasn't until 1997 that we actually began to hear publicly just, you know, how far down the road that they had gone. In December of 97, the Executive Council approved a proposal to allot $360 million to the repair and construction of new schools. $25 million of that was for new school construction, but the government only planned to invest $25 million a year annually to do this. So how are they going to do that? Well, the Auditor General reported later on in 1997 that the issue was between capital leases and operating leases. What that means is if it's a capital lease, you have to book it that year, all of the expenses. If it's an operating lease, it's like a lease on a car, then you can factor it out each year and just the payments, what they were. But the idea had to do with risk. And what the Auditor General said was that these aren't really operating risks because there isn't any transfer of risk. The risk is all with the public sector, and that is what the big deal came to be. So, the Auditor General also said in 1997 that P3 schools and heading this way represented a huge fundamental shift in the way school construction was being handled in the province of Nova Scotia. And he said, you'd think that there would have been an analysis to take a look at P3 construction, compare it with the traditional method to find out what was good and what wasn't about it. Well, there wasn't any such analysis done. The government of the day believed that this is what was going to happen. And they went, in fact, there never had been until later on in 1999. So, the government was sold on the idea it was an easy way to get jobs built, build schools. And of course, building schools and community was a way that governments had gotten reelected for years and years. It was an opportunity to help friends and business, and it was a political issue, and it was an opportunity to create a political issue, a wedge issue for the opposition. Because, let me explain, you've got communities where parents are concerned about the schools falling down. The schools are making their kids sick. There's no computers in the schools. They need a new school. They need a place for their children to learn effectively and to learn it in a healthy and safe environment. These people were coming along and they're saying, we can do that. Not only that, we can give you all of the new bells and whistles and it'll be the best thing since sliced bread. And parents, frankly, didn't care how it was paid for. They just wanted their schools. They just wanted their kids to be educated in a way that was constructive, that was positive, and that they were safe. So there was all kinds of problems that happened as a result of that, this idea of working collectively within the community. Well, the private developers came in, and they had their own ideas about where schools were going to be located, on land that they owned, perhaps, or in an area of a particular community where they wanted to build a housing development. So there became increasing conflicts within the community between the developers and between the communities that were involved. In order to find the economies of scale, if you will, they had to close small schools in order to build a bigger school, right, that had more capacity, that they were able to reach a certain volume so that it would make more sense. And of course, in many of our communities, people still believe, thank God, that, smaller schools are located in the community are often a better way to deliver education to students rather than the big regional schools or whatever. So all of these kind of conflicts began to develop within many schools. Schools did not open when they were scheduled. There was increasing tension. You had new schools going up in the community, say at the post or at the junior high level, that had all this technology in it. You had kids in elementary school that didn't have any access to technology. So once they got into university, they'd have to learn how to use the computers and all the rest of it. And then they'd go to high school down the road that didn't have any computers. So, they weren't being integrated. It wasn't really making a whole lot of sense. The other thing you had is the provincial government's plans were coming into conflict with local levels of government because you had people moving to different parts of a county, of a community, in order to be in the catchment area for a big technologically enriched school. And that was changing the property tax patterns for a particular municipality. So, and of course, you had the NDP out there, just kind of raising hell and trying through many freedom of information requests to try to get out details of contracts. It used to be so frustrating. We used to think that they were just holding back on us. that they didn't want to release the details of the contracts. Well, little did we know, we finally came to find out that the contracts hadn't been designed, hadn't been developed. In the case, many times, the contracts weren't finished until the schools were well finished. And they were educating students and all the rest of it. And it was later. It was, let me tell you, it was interesting. So then we had a couple of elections in 1998. It was a big election issue. In 1998, we had a provincial election. One of the biggest schools, most glamorous schools, I know you'll be shocked to hear this, was in the Minister of Education's riding. Right? And that was the one that we focused a lot of our attention on. We had all kinds of names for it, to describe it as a big palace. That's what it was. The fact that it happened to be away from where most of the kids lived and on a piece of property that was owned by the developer helped us too. But the bottom line is that the Minister of Education, who was pretty popular, and he wasn't a bad guy, you know, he got caught up in all this stuff about the P3s. He was defeated. And he was defeated on this issue and this issue alone. So it was a big deal. We then had an election in 1999. The Tories were kind of sitting back in the weeds a bit on this one. The NDP after 1998 were tied with the Liberals, and the Tories were the third party, so they kind of tried to stay low on this issue. Except that in the Premier's home riding was one of the most active community groups that were opposed to P3 schools and were concerned about what they were doing. One of the things they were going to do there was collapse a bunch of small schools into a big school. So people were wound up in that community, were riled up, and they got the Premier's attention, and the Tories eventually were forced to have to take a position in opposition to the P3 schools, which they did. They were then, unfortunately, elected in 1999. I don't know why, but they were. But most importantly on this issue is the fact that they did follow through. They had a study done, which showed clearly that this was a bad idea for the province of Nova Scotia. They stopped the P3 deals, or they wouldn't let any more happen, and they've been building schools. We've been building schools in the traditional manner in Nova Scotia ever since. They have been done cheaper on time, and of course they've been owned and controlled by the public sector. Problems continue to arise about those P3 schools in terms of the costs that are being charged for after-school use, the condition of fields, the fact that the private sector isn't refreshing technology like they said that they were going to do. We finally got our hands on a contract last year through an arbitration, a contract which said that the private developer gets 35% of all concession sales. Right? 35% of all concession sales, chocolate bars, the sale of pop or whatever it is, 35%. That was in the contract. No wonder they didn't want to get them. Okay. So what's my point? I just said that because many people do, right? Now, I'm sure you're asking that question, right? So what is my point? Just a second here. How much time? Do I have another 5 minutes? Even though the evidence is overwhelming, not everyone is convinced that this is lame. This is a bad idea. In fact, the Liberals have recently elected a new leader who thinks that P3s are probably a pretty good idea. Let me conclude by saying that that battle has had an impact. We think that we've been able to stop some other P3 deals in the Maritime. St. John's were heading for a plan to clean up their harbor. And they were looking at P3s. The mayor said to me, we're not going to go the same way Nova Scotia went because we don't want that kind of headache, right? In Halifax, with the sewage treatment facility, a plan to build three sewage treatment plants, that was going to cost like $360 million through a private sector partner, they've eventually backed off of that. And we believe that much of the controversy around public-private partnerships has had an impact on that and on other things. So what does this mean for Nova Scotia? What does it mean in terms of what happened in Nova Scotia? First of all, I think, you know, we have to understand that those of us who are opposed to public-private partnerships are right, for all of the reasons that other people are going to talk about. Control by the private sector or public services, the lack of transparency, the profiting from public services, and the lack of accountability, all of those things. We're right. We're right about all of that. It's all about politics, because the reality is, however you want to shake it down, that whether it's at the municipal level or the provincial level, our governments, our decision makers seem to have access to less and less resources, and they're trying to find answers. They're not all necessarily, you know, they aren't all necessarily corrupt or not overly bright or evil. Some are, I understand. Present company excluded, right? But they're trying, you know, they're trying to find solutions for those parents and communities whose schools are falling apart. We got to come up. There's got to be a solution to that. So we've got to take that into consideration as we fight these battles. You know, in other words, we can mount the best evidence. You know, we can mount the best evidence, like Keith does, and Keith did on the RAV deal. We can mount the best evidence in the world, but if we can't get the decision makers to listen, then, you know, what progress are we making? So I think the important thing to realize is that we are right. We knew that. I know you didn't need to bring me in from Nova Scotia to tell you that we're right. But we are right on this issue. And we see it every day when these things fall apart, when they implode, when people learn what's really going on. We've got to help people in communities understand what's going on, and we've got to let politicians know that they're going to pay a price if they head down this road. So, thanks very much.